couple of considerations must be done relatively to the accuracy that is introduced in the measurement and in the usage of the acquisition chain by the quantization issue related to the sampling and analog to digital conversion. To sample a signal, as we have seen, is a task that is carried out by the sampling and hold unit. Generally speaking, we know that there is a theorem called Shannon theorem or Nyquist theorem that assures us the minimum condition that is necessary to respect to obtain a correct reconstruction of the original signal from the sampled one. This condition says that the sampling frequency must be at least twice the original frequency of the signal that is sampled. This condition is typically only a theoretical condition not employed in practical problems, in practical application, due to the fact that to sample a signal only with a frequency that is twice the original one is not enough to assure the correct reproducibility of the signal itself. As the slide 26 correctly shown, sinusoidal waveform signal, if sampled with a frequency twice its own one, will turn out in a horizontal line. In fact, sampling, and of course this can happen, sampling the signal in the first point that is the origin, then when the time is equal to half the period, and then when again the time is at the end of the period, we have three instances into which the sinusoidal waveform is zero. Therefore, joining those points, we will have an horizontal line. If we sample the signal with a frequency that is four times the original one, four times the frequency corresponding to the period of the sine, we will have the triangular waveform shown in the picture with yellow dotted lines. In fact, we are supposing that the first sample is taken in the initial moment into which t is equal to zero, then we sample the signal in the time that is half the first half period, then we are sampling the signal in half the period, then we sample the signal in 3 on 4 times the period, and finally we sample the signal in the instant of time equal to the complete period. The corresponding points are joined with a line, and we obtain a final, let's say, reconstructed signal that is similar, generally speaking, roughly speaking, to the sinusoidal component, but clearly doesn't correspond perfectly to it. To perform a better sampling, so as to have a more suitable, a more accurate reconstruction of the signal, it is necessary to sample with an even higher frequency, for example 5, 6, even 10 times the original frequency. And this is what normally is done in the measurement chains that are used for such a task. This doesn't mean that the rule that we have learned is wrong. In other words, the Shannon theorem is still valid. But to understand the real behavior of a signal from the samples that we have taken of it, following the rule sample frequency equal 2 times the signal frequency, it is necessary to multiply every sample by the so-called sinc function. The shape of the sinc function is shown in the middle of the slide 26, and just to avoid to go into the details, sinc function is the ratio between sine function of suitable value x divided by the same value x. The figure shows that the samples colored in magenta of a particular signal must be multiplied each one by the sinc function, and the general new form, new vision of the signal from the microprocessor point of view will be the sum of all the samples of the signal in the KTC instance of time multiplied by the value of the sinc function in the same basically instance of time. This is very heavy from the computational point of view, in particular in those industrial applications that can be called embedded. I mean that sometimes, not often, but even not rare, we are obliged to use processors whose computational capabilities are not so high and whose working frequency is not 1 GHz, but for example 50 MHz or even less. For such a kind of family of processor, those operations that may be very elementary for the normal ones are very heavy, are very complex, due to the fact that their reduced computational capabilities are conceived to avoid large power consumption. For example, it is typical that such a kind of processor don't feature the presence of a floating point unit. In this case, even a simple operation like the one we have described could take more time than usual, and this will affect the velocity of the acquisition and maybe also the accuracy, because it will be necessary to perform it through an algorithm. So, in many applications, especially those into which those processors are employed, it is more practicable and easier to increase the sampling frequency. And this is the reason why, typically, we sample the signal with a frequency that could be around 10 times the original one. Another issue that could affect the accuracy of the measurement is related to the analog-to-digital conversion. We know that the precision of the conversion is characterized by a quantization error that is obtained by the ratio of the reference voltage, also called full scale, that the analog to digital converter accepts, divided by 2 power n, where n is the number of the bits of the digit into which an input voltage will be converted. This is well clarified by the figure in the slide 27 that shows the transfer function of an analog to digital converter, In this case, we have output code expressed by means of 3 bits. So on the vertical axis, we have all the possible codifications with 3 bits, while in the horizontal axis, we have the full-scale range of the input possible voltages divided by the number of possible intervals into which we have to divide this range due to the fact that the possible output codifications are 8, as 8 is the result of 2 power 3, and 3 are the bits in output. So for every input interval, we will have an output codification that will remain constant for all those voltages that belong to that particular interval. So the first one corresponds to 0, the second one corresponds to 1, the third one corresponds to 2, and so on, up to the last one that corresponds to 111, that is 7. We could say that the transfer function of ADC is similar to a staircase function, and the quantization error we have mentioned is due to the fact that the same output codification corresponds to a certain group of input voltages that can be large if the number of the bits we are using is small, and will be very, very short if the converter will feature, for example, 10, 12, even 16 output bits. In the figure in the right side of the slide, we have shown the effect that signal undergoes due to the digital to analog conversion that clearly gives an idea of the quantization error that doesn't allow to reproduce completely exactly the original shape, and the error that clearly is visible from the figure will be less and less if the number of the bits of the ADC is very high, but clearly we cannot think to use a converter, for example, with 42 bits, because the accuracy that is assured in that case is useless with respect to what it is typically required by industrial applications. The figure shows also the counter effect, the opposite effect we have when we convert in analog a signal represented by a sequence of digital binary numbers. So, for example, a 20 volt signal that must be acquired with 1 millivolt precision requires a number of levels that is given by the ratio of 20 volts by 1 millivolt, and it is 20,000. 20,000 levels can be assured only by a 15 bits ADC. On the other hand, if we suppose that a 100 millivolt noise will affect such a kind of signal, 20 volts divided by 100 millivolts will be more or less corresponding to 200 levels. So continuing to use 15 bits is useless, because the precision given by a 15 bits ADC allows us only to measure the noise with very high accuracy. Therefore, In this case, if the noise cannot be eliminated, only 8 bits are enough. If we want to have the original mentioned precision, we will need a low-pass filter that will be effective only if the noise is null average, and after the filtering we will be able to apply the 15 bits ADC to the signal and read it with the 1 millivolt mentioned precision. Typically, industrial applications exploit ADCs with 12, 16 bits, no more than this. We don't want to go into the details that are mainly electronic about the way into which we can carry out such a kind of ADCs. But a general rule says that the faster the converter, the less accurate it will be. We can have converters very fast, I mean the conversion time is 10 nanoseconds with 5-7 bits output. Conversely, we will have ADCs with 16 and more bits whose conversion time could be around 100-500 milliseconds. Finally, to estimate the number of the bits required to achieve a certain precision, it is necessary to evaluate the logarithm on base 2 of the reverse of that precision, typically is given as a percentage number, and can be calculated as the ratio of the signal full scale range divided by the maximum absolute error that is allowed on the signal itself. Or, conversely, the precision can be evaluated as the maximum value that the physical magnitude can assume divided by the maximum absolute error that can be tolerated on the measurement of the same physical magnitude. Another issue that can be present corresponds to a situation that is completely different than before, and it is related in the acquisition chain to the set point acquisition, that is to the value that the process variable must have to properly set the process on the desired activity we want it has. Typically, the set point can be given by setting a suitable variable in the memory of the microprocessor that specifies the control function. But in many industrial environments, the set point is given by means of suitable electromechanics devices that are called contrails. An example of such a device is shown in the slide 28, into which that we can see that the device is made by many digits. Each one can be set by the operator by rotating a suitable wheel that is located side by side every digit that is present in the electromechanical device. In terms of equivalent circuit, every digit is carried out by a network more or less similar to the one that is presented in the left upper part of the slide, where the CHAN square features a certain number of switches whose commutation determines the binary codification of the number that we want to represent. For example, if we want to set 9, the first switch will be open, the second and the third will be closed, and the last one will be open. This will allow, considering also the resistors and the 5 volts power supply, to have a logic level high in the first and in the last line that are connected to the port of a microprocessor, and a low level logic in the two internal ones, 1001. Clearly, for a situation like the one depicted in the slide, where the contrave feature 5 digits, this will correspond to use 20 of the bits of the ports of the microprocessor itself. And if we have 2 or 3 of devices like this one, the capability of the output ports of the microprocessor could finish quite briefly. To avoid to spread uselessly bits of the output ports of the bit of the microprocessor, a matrix solution could be envisioned. And one idea can be seen in the slide 29, into which we see that the situation into which we need to read 4 digits, 4 binary coded digits, like in the previous example, together with 8 push button connection that correspond to 24 bits potentially, can be easily acquired by a single 8-bit port plus a decodification unit plus a decoder. In the picture, the 4 digits are shown by the magenta rectangles, and the push button connection are represented by those red circles. The general idea is that every digit and every couple of push button are read on a step-by-step basis. The first group at the beginning, then the second group, then the third group, then the fourth group. And clearly they will be reconstructed and processed internally into the microprocessor. The concept of a step-by-step acquisition is made possible by the presence of a decoder. The decoder selects every time one of its own 4 outputs that will be connected to the 4 connection of the BCD digits, the magenta rectangle, and to the couple of push button that must be read at the same time. To select one of the 4 possible outputs of a decoder, it is necessary to use a couple of bits in input to it, and we see that the parallel port exits indeed 2 bits that enter into the decoder, and will activate one of the 4 output lines. Consider that when we say activate, we mean that that line will be connected to the ground. So on a step-by-step basis, we can write in those 2 bits 00, and we will select and activate the first row. Then 01, and we will activate the second row. Then 10, and we will activate the third row. And finally 11, and we will activate the last row. The voltage values that are present on every row will be read by the 6 bits corresponding to the column of such a kind of network that are connected to the other bits of the port PIU. You see the connections represented by those black circles. The six resistors are necessary, as you know, because they are pull-up resistors that allow to have the line, the column, high when the connection of the output decoder is not driven, is not connected to the ground. The cross points between columns and lines in the decoder output are connected by means of suitable diodes. This connection is necessary to decouple every column from every line. Otherwise, some errors in the acquisition of the values could happen. Consider the situation, for example, that is shown in the lower right part of the slide 21. We have a couple of rows into which two columns are connected, and in the first row the two diodes and the two switches are closed, so a physical short circuit is present between the column and the row, and when selected the row is put at the ground, so a couple of low logic levels will be read by the port, will be sent to the input pins of the port, and the microprocessor will read 0 and 0. Conversely, when selecting the second row, we notice that the first connection between row and column features the diode and the switch closed, so it corresponds to a low logic level, while the second one features the presence of the diode and the switch open. So in this case no current flows through the diode, and a high logic level is read by the port. So the microprocessor will acquire a 0 and a 1. Now let's consider the situation into which the diodes are not present, but only the switches. So same situation, 0-0 in the first row, 0-1 in the second row. Let's select the first row. We have the two switches closed, so the two columns are connected to the ground, and a couple of low logic levels will be read by the microprocessor that will acquire 0 and 0. Now let's imagine to select the second row into which the first connection between column and row is a short circuit. I'm talking about the left column, while the second one is physically not connected to the row itself. So the microprocessor should acquire a 0 and a 1, but due to the fact that there is a short circuit between the left column and the row to the ground, the left column is in turn connected in the upper row to the general horizontal row, and this one is in turn connected to the column in the right part of the mesh. So the column should be read as a 1, but due to the fact that we have three short circuits, the real logic level that will be acquired by the port will be a 0, and this is clearly wrong. The problem is that the presence of the short circuits circulates a value, in this case a 0 logic level, that is not correct with respect the value set in the lower row. The presence of the diodes eliminates such a kind of problem, because the free diodes allow to carry out the short circuit between every column and the corresponding row, but will prevent any current flow from the low row to the left column, from the left column to the upper row, and from the upper row to the right column. In other words, the physical connection, the physical short circuit, would be present if a current crosses the diode in the sense into which the diode is oriented, that is, from the anode to the cathode. This is possible only when the cathode of the diode is physically connected to the ground. In the problem that we have highlighted, this is not possible. In other words, if the lower row is selected, the diode that connects the left column with the row will be really working, and the column will be set to the ground. But the same column will be not connected to the upper row, because the upper row is not selected, and this means that its extremity is floating. When a part of the circuit is floating for a diode, is basically with infinite impedance. This prevents from the flowing of any kind of current through the diode, and separates physically the left column from the upper row. The same consideration can be done for the right column with respect to the same row, so no circulation of the low logic level 0 of the left column connected to the lower row will happen, and the right column will remain set to 1, and no error, no wrong acquisition will happen. But this is due exclusively to the presence of the diodes that decouple rows and columns. Finally, many of the previous considerations that we have done can be applied also to the problem we have when we want to control by means of the output of a microprocessor the behavior of a whatever electronic component. In particular, the microprocessor will control those actuators that will influence the behavior of the process. This is typically done, as shown in slide 30, through the use of a DAC, a digital to analog converter, 12 bits in this example, that is controlled in the same way as an analog to digital converter, that is through a start of conversion bit and an end of conversion bit. The microprocessor will trigger the conversion through the SOC command bit and will wait for the end of the conversion, monitoring the EOC bit. The picture shows a particular situation into which the same microprocessor and the same DAC is connected to, for example, four potential external devices, maybe four motors, for example. So the analog voltage that exits from the DAC must be provided to the first actuator, to the second one, to the third one, and to the fourth one. Maybe sometimes the value provided to all the actuators is the same, maybe in other situations the value is different. to provide the value for the necessary time to the connected actuator, and then to switch to the next one, a solution featuring the presence of four samples and hold circuits is presented, because every sample and hold takes the analog value presented by the DAC and holds it for a certain interval of time, keeping it stable for the device that is connected to itself, in this example the actuator, allowing the possibility of controlling perfectly that actuator for the duration of the interval it keeps the signal stable, and at the same time allowing the control of the next device that is connected to the microprocessor. Of course, it is necessary that we select the first sample and hold, the second, the third, and the fourth, and this is possible through the usage of a decoder unit. In this case, we will have four outputs, so two bits in input coming from the microprocessor can be used. And clearly, it is also necessary that the repetition period of such a sequence of activation is long enough to activate all the actuators, all the devices connected to the sample and hold, but even short enough to avoid that the holding time through which every sample and hold keeps the signal stable has expired. In terms of precision, we have to repeat considerations that we have already done in the acquisition phase. About the conversion frequency, clearly it depends on the input data arrival to the processor. I mean that the acquisition chain is ruled by the sequence of multiplexer, sample and hold, analog to digital converter that must be controlled by the microprocessor. The overall time that a signal takes to arrive to the microprocessor is the sum of all the single components. And typically, the most important one is the conversion time of the ADC. So we could say that the same is the time into which we acquire the evolution of a physical magnitude, the same will be the time through which we will control the actuators that will affect the process by means of a digital to analog converter. Conversely, how many bits we could ask to ourselves it is necessary to use for the digital to analog conversion. If we don't know exactly the dynamics of the process, this could be a question with an answer that is very, very difficult to be given, because we could use too much precision or an accuracy that is not enough. Clearly, the problem of the precision in the conversion is not high if the evolution of the process is slow, because in any case this will give us the possibility of correcting a value that is not exactly set for that process. But just as a general rule, we can say that the same number of bits used for the analog to digital conversion in the acquisition of the process variable is used for the digital to analog conversion that will allow to control properly the actuators. Okay, this ends the part of the course devoted to those electronic circuits that interface the transducer with the analog to digital conversion stage and then with the microprocessor. In some cases, simply transferring the signal, in other cases, converting the impedance that changed due to the variation of the physical magnitude into a suitable voltage. In some other cases, rectifying the alternate signal provided by the transducer. In other final cases, manipulating the signal so as to minimize the effect of the noise onto it. Now we switch to a part of the course that is devoted to how to influence the behavior of the process by means of suitable devices that are called actuators. Actuators, since they actuate, they perform an action controlled by the microprocessor onto the application process that we are considering. We will see two typical actuators that are motors, the direct current motor and the stepper motor, very popular and used to control rotation velocity, rotation position, and torque exerted in several industrial conditions. And we will study a couple of transistors that are typically used for supplying the power to them. They are called silicon controlled rectifier and TRIAC. Since these kind of electronic devices can be used not only for supplying the motors, but also for supplying a suitable power that can be tuned by the microprocessor to a process like, for example, the heat regulation that allows to keep the temperature of a room, for example, under control. They will be presented at the beginning of this section devoted to the actuators as they were actuators themselves. First of all, let's start from a premise that is related to such a kind of general definition of actuator, a device that transforms the control signal provided by the controller into an electric power and then in other kinds of power or energy that can be mechanical, chemical, thermal, kinetic, and so on. And this happens accordingly to the nature of the process. A first intuitive solution to provide electrical power to a process is to employ the so-called operational amplifiers, as shown in the slide 2 of the actuator section. The amplifier will provide a power that is equal to the product of the current crossing the amplifier, time the voltage that is given to it, so I1 time V1 in the slide. And generally speaking, this power is greater than the power WZ that is provided and consumed by the process that in the picture is represented by the load ZL. Since the current that crosses the amplifier is greater than the current crossing the load, and the same can be said about the voltages V1 and VZ that is consumed by the process itself. In other words, the power that is not delivered to the load is lost on the amplifier, as heat, and thus can limit the yield of the supplying. This is acceptable if we are working with powers that are not great. It is not acceptable otherwise, because first of all, the yield will be very poor and most of the energy is spread. And the second, high powers will mean high thermal energy lost and high temperatures that can put under risk both the process and the control electronic circuits. On the other hand, it is possible to adopt, as we have seen in the past, a PWM approach, a pulse width modulation approach, that is a strong power amount is provided for a limited interval of time, and then no power at all is given to the process. However, in this case, the load must be sensible to the average of the applied signal, as if a smaller voltage would have been applied constantly. We called this solution chopper. And clearly, this condition explains us that not always it is possible to do such a thing. Fortunately, we have at our disposal a solution that makes possible to use a new type of rectifier that is called silicon controlled rectifier, SCR.